you have such as Abilina, Abba, Asmach, AM, Ada, Asses Jaw, Arker, Andy Ate Batch, Breuer, Beef. Now these are not all Morphys. Like they're different names such as Baller, that's Baller Lawless, Bocaddy Lawless, Belly, Beezer, Bendigo, Banel, Butts, Bunker. Ringsend had a tradition more so than any other town or village in Ireland with nicknames. I think the reason for that was there's so many Morphys in it and Burns. Ringsend is saturated with Morphys. For instance, my name is Paddy, but very few people in Ringsend knows my name is Paddy. They call me Lyric. Now, and if a stranger went to look for a particular Paddy, such as myself, he'd be probably looking for a needle in the haystack, looking for Paddy Morphy. I say there's about 15 in our flats alone, Whelan House there. So hence the word, the nicknames of so many Morphys. Bunker, the born sailor, he was a Morphy, yeah. Black Paddy, Bob Stirrup, Buck, Blue Leg, Butler, Bulletproof, Bishop, Bish, Ball Alley, Bando, Bubbles, Balbo, Boxer.
How old are these nicknames? Were they handed down or what?
Well, they were handed down. Now, for instance, my grandfather, I say his nickname would go back 150 years. He was always known as Skullabout. And he died in 1922, I think it was. He was 95 years of age or something like that. And he was always known as Skullabout.
How did he get the name Skullabout?
He was always sculling about in one of his yards, you know, when his boats would be up inspecting his trawlers. He owned a 7 smacks sometime or another in Ringsend.
And how about other names? Can you remember any
well,
others?
Well, you had Turf. Turf Morphy, that was a nephew of my grandfather's. He was a shipwright, better known in Ringsend as a Chippy. Now, I'll tell you a story about him. He left Ringsend the sailing ship. He was after getting married, and he left the following day to do a trip to Fremantle in Australia. He was only supposed to be home or away 12 months at the most. It was 20 years before that man come back. He met with misfortune some way or another out there. And it was 20 years after his marriage that he arrived back and brings out to his wife.
A schooner sailed from George's Quay for foreign parts one sultry season, and on the shore a maiden stood and cried like one bereft of reason. Oh, Johnny Doyle, me love for you is true but full of deep contrition, for what will all the neighbours say about me and my condition?
Now, we have another brother of his, the born sailor. He was boiling tar to cork the decks of one of his boats he was after building, and the tar overflowed on the fire and burned his face, and it left him with a big scar on one side of his face, on the starboard side of his face, which the result was he was always known as the born sailor from Ringsend. That was Peter Morphy. And they had Ball Alley Gaffney. He was an apple man for screaming and shouting, hence the word Ball Alley. And you had Bulletproof Power. Now, he was shot in 1916, a bullet went through his jaw. And he carried that nickname from that day on, Bulletproof. He was scared, all right, but I don't think it done him any other harm.
But the people of Ringsend were not all Murphys or even Papishes. The 1766 census shows 79 Protestants to 24 Papishes. The surnames are as unusual as the nicknames.
you have the Blackmores. They were Tarbeas, Blackmores, Memories, Pullens, Sims, the Davies, the Becketts, the Rowdens. And then you had... They were called Tarbeas. And then you had the Scottish people. I know. You had the MacDonalds, D-O-N-A-L-D. The Hawthorns. You had the Bears. You had the Dollisons. You had the Hicksons. You had the Wybrows. They were Scottish people. And you had the Bests. Then you had a ghetto down here in Ringsend called the Scotch Alley. They were all Scotch people that lived in that alley.
And many more of them settled in the 4 shilling cottages on the Pigeon House Road.
On a Sunday afternoon, I thought I'd take a stroll. I strolled along the Pigeon House Road until I came to a shop. Now the shop was selling birds. It had such a wonderful stock. I handed her a half a crown and she handed me a cock, a doodle-oo. Well, it's nothing to do with you, for my old cock is a rare old cock and it's cock-a-doodle-oo. I brought my wee cock home. I put it in on the cage, along with an old grey feather hen who flew up in a rage. A lady was passing by. She said, "What's the matter, Jock?" Well, that old grey feather hen of yours has scratched my little cock-a-doodle-oo. It's nothing to do with you, for my old cock is a rare old cock and it's cock-a-doodle-oo. Now we got into the bowl, and the boat began to rock, and the fish put up his head, and he ran away with me cock-a-doodle-oo. It's nothing to do with you, for my old cock is a rare old cock, and it's cock.
This town has a nickname too, Raytown. No one, there was no market for Ray years and years ago. No one adhesed, only the Ringsend people, and the city people thought the people of Ringsend were cannibals to eat such a coarse fish as Ray. And it wasn't until the Italians entered this city and they exploited the nutritious value of Cuchan Ray, hence now you can't get it, the boy. And it's a pity the Italians didn't come into the country 100 years earlier, and the people of Ringsend have been pretty prosperous now. They used to have to throw the Ray back overboard, and they used to bring it home as a fry, give it away in Ringsend. I think we lived on Ray then. I remember every other lane and alley in Ringsend, you'd see it hanging up to dry, and the sun would dry it and cure it.
You had a great delicacy here called Toad Ray, I believe, Lyric. How is that?
Oh, well, I tell you, yeah, they used to wing the ray, and they towed maybe about 24 through the sea, maybe from Clockerhead right down to the Bailey Light, and whatever reaction the seawater had on it, run it through the water with the trawler towing it, that it was like a chicken, a toad ray. They take out the centre, the backbone, and wings it. They make past all the wings and throw them out with a heaving line or maybe a log line and tow them behind them for miles, down as far as the Bailey, from Clockerhead. And it'd be lovely and tender, beautiful. That was a delicacy in Ringsend, tow dray.
And if the lads were going out, would they be asked to bring back?
Oh, yeah, they brought us back for their homes, you know. Now, maybe my father would be going out. He used to go out for a week at a time, you know. He always left it Sunday night, weather permitting. And they'd arrive back for Thursday morning or Friday morning's market. Thursday morning, they used to, providing like the weather was kind to them. And they'd try and make it for Monday morning and they'd have the tow dry.
Ray, 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 that's the stuff for me. I liked it for my dinner. I like it for my tea. I like it when it's hot. I like it when it's cold. Ray, 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 that's the stuff for me. I-E-I-O, 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 I-E-I-O.
Gitta Murphy singing the praises of the Ray. Gitta is the king of Raytown. Lyrics is the chronicler, but the court jester is definitely Ali Gatta.
When was that, say, in India? Calcutta. I shacked up with a boat. And I was there for a week, and I had it. This is the trout I got. If you ever go to India, Gitta, especially on an Irish ship, I'd say any ship, but these guys come on board with references. And you'd read a reference. This is a dirty, lazy bastard. Do not ever imply him. Sign it. You know, and you'd say to your man, very good. But you were all coming to me. I was the second cook.
Yeah.
And they were all coming to me. So I decided to imply this fella. Mm. And you know the way he won't eat bacon around? He used to say to me, keep them all away. Put side of bacon on. Bulkhead. I don't know where they all are. But I had your man up alive. You know how much I was giving him? I was paying him better than the doctors was even getting paid. I was giving him about 4 rupees a day. And a rupee at that time was worth in old money about 1 and 6 months.
Yeah.
Say I was giving him 6 or 7 shillings. And every night I used to give him a few sausages, pudding, eggs. And he's supposed to not eat bacon. He used to take the fucking wretches off me. But every night I was going out the gate, you're only allowed 20. You're only allowed a carton in.
Yeah.
But you're only allowed to take 20 out the gate. I used to give him 40 or 60. Because over there at that time, you'd get you over a bar of soap, you know. And when I'd walk out the gate, here'd be a man in front of me. And the minute I get outside, fair play to him, he'd have me smokes for me. And then I go off, you know, whatever bills I go to, wherever I got a club or a canteen or whatever it was. But he never let me down. And anyone coming along to the porthole like this or the door, Mungie, Mungie, John, he was like a bouncer. They were gone. He used to do for me, wash me clothes and everything. And that's what his name was, Ali Gatta. And when I come back here, I kept it. I used to scream when I get drunk. And isn't that right? I used to walk in the flats locked out 12 o'clock at night. Ali Gatta! And you were on saying, hey, what the fuck am I doing? And now do you know? It's still with me, and that's over 20 years ago. Isn't that right? Do you know what I used to do, Rona? Come in drunk. I used to jump up on the pram shed and do a somersault, put me legs through me arms, and drop back on the ground, and then sing a song. And everybody would say, don't mind it, that's only charity bird.
What was it again?
Oh, the lady Sylvia, remember her?
Little blue boat. She was spotless. But me and Fran was over there this day, you know. I heard her battening down the hatches. And next who was there only Mickey Ratley and Billiers Brady. You know the Dutchman. Billiers is standing boy for when the derry gets dropped to lash it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And here's Mickey on the winch. And you know the way you sword it?
Yeah.
You just take a word off a girl. And she comes down nice and easy. Says, Billiers, he sword it, Mickey. And Mickey takes all the word off the fucking drum head.
Yeah, okay.
Boom! And Billiers was only that much away, man. They say, you don't deep pox, you nearly killed me. You know what Mickey says? I get you and we're out in the bay. Like a picture of the two of them sailing together after that. He definitely nearly killed them.
Guinea, Hare, Holla. I'll say Holla Donaldson. Hammer, Hammerhead. Hairpin, Hero.
I said to Jerry and Holla, says I, come on, we go down and visit Eddie. Says I, we'll have a drink and
all. No, on the way down we met Holla. And
yeah,
Holla was going like yeah. this, you know, you shake.
And I went into the pot. I knew what Eddie liked, you see. He loved tripe, you see. Yeah. And I went in and bought a pound of tripe, bring it down there, welcome. So. Yeah, we met Holla and a caretaker out of flats, was it? We brought
a caretaker.
Yeah. So, went down. There was Eddie sitting on the sofa. He must have been sitting there for the past 24 hours, rotten drunk, you see. Yeah. And all the buttons.
We angered ourselves.
Now, what are you having? Help yourself. So, Holla thought. There wasn't so much drink. I knew you could be drinking there for a fortnight and you wouldn't have been able to. So Holly gets a tumbler, a half pint tumbler, and fills it up with that, what? A banana brandy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right, polish it off. Betty was up to going down to the town. Holly was like a vulture, thought he wouldn't get enough. The next thing was then, we decided we go up and have a Jarden Smith to see. Now, when we got Holly outside and the air hit him,
yeah.
He couldn't walk.
It was about half six, wasn't it?
Shirley had him linked under one arm, and I had him the other. And we were pulling him.
When we got up to the
his heels wouldn't come off the ground. So he says to me, when we were passing the park gate, he says, let me into the park, he says, and I'll have a kip in the park.
I'd sleep there till half and nine or 9 o'clock.
I said, you can't. So did you hear the bell going around at 10 o'clock? It was only between half five and six, wasn't it?
Around 6 o'clock, yeah. Half six.
So, anyway, this is the best part
the
of
house.
The best part of it all was this. We got him around to the house. We knocked at the door. Never listen. Yeah, let him in. We knocked at the door and she opened it. Nancy opened it. Sager heart, did you? She said, what's this? Well, says I, look at Nancy, it's a bit of a celebration. He's at the clicking on the horses. He's a three cross and the treble. She says, and there's not a crust of bread in the kit. Come in, you sminer. She gets
and you know what Eddie was at the town? You know all the stuff that he left behind? Eddie put it all in a bottle, didn't he?
Yeah. Put it in his pocket with
a cure for when he makes up. So we put it
in his pocket.
And then when he tells Nancy that he's got to get the three crosses.
Anyway, she gets a hold of me the next morning. She says, come here, you.
No, she put the bottle down the tube, didn't she?
She did not. She drank it, she told me. She says, come here, you. That was the right way you left that man, she says. And she says, you left him without a penny, she says. I searched every pocket and there wasn't a screed in his pocket. But so sorry, now we left him a cura. She said, did you? Well, she says he didn't get it because I drank it. And she says, well, I get that Eddie Rellins and that Jerry Byrne, she says. The two of them ought to be blast well ashamed and said they should be married a pair of them, she said. Right, we're doing a job up in Bad Avenue. You know, renovating the house, and Robert got a bit of grit in his eye, and he had to drive up to the Ioneer Hospital. And he went in, the porter says, go in there, he says, there's no doctors here yet. They're a bit early. Holla's over 6 foot. He puts on one of the doctor's white coats, puts on the goggles over his head and what have you. And there's a lot of old fogies to see lined up. Holla come out. And he says, next, this old fella walks in, you see. He says, strip off. It's my oyster. Never mind your eyes. Strip off and do what you're told. So we examine him. He says, how long have you got this complaint? What complaint? He says, you... Do you know? He says, your heart shifted, my dear mental life. See, no, sir, says he. I'm only attended here with my eyes. Now, what mind your eyes, he says. You can live without your eyes, he says. But that thing you have, says he. Don't attempt. Where do you live, he says. I live over in Clontarpshire. Don't you attempt, he says. Get for the cab and get home as quick as you like. And he says, do you know? You're beyond all medical age, a spiritual age you need. Go and see your clergy immediately. Next, brings in another airplane, and he's tapping him left, right, tell us, sure, says he, I have a cataract. Never mind that, he says, we look after that. Says he, do you know, you dear man, you're not long for this war. He said, before it finished, Robert says, all the old fellas done, gone out at Hatch Street and
I know a little street where old friends meet. I'd love to wander back someday to youth Mayfield old and sort of tumble down. For it means a lot to friends in my hometown. Whether you're rich or poor, I feel so sure that you're as welcome as the flowers in May. That's on Castle Street in Ringsend, where old friends meet, and they greet you in the same old way.
Smith's Pub in Thorncastle Street is situated in the heart of Raytown. The pub's present social involvement in the community must owe something to the original owner, who was a notorious practical joker.
Mitt was a fanatic for fish. He loved fish. I think he's still alive. He lives in Dunleary somewhere. But this particular day, there was a heat wave. And Holly came in as usual after being fishing for white bait. And he says to Mr. Smith, the publican, he says, Mr. Smith, will you give us a pint for them? Two mackerel, or two fine mackerel now. And Smith gave him 2 points instead of one. 2 points for the two mackerel. Now, Smith says to me, Lurick, he says, do you know what about cleaning fish? I say, of course I do. What Ringsend man doesn't? Well, says he, would you ever go over the counter, he says, and clean them and take the bone out of them? I'm going to have them for me tea. Me missus is on her holiday. So fair play. Right. I cleaned them, and he told me to put the guts underneath the counter in a bag, a paper bag. I put them under, and up he went to have his tea when his manager to come in to relieve him. So it just dawned on me, we were after having mackerel the day before, you see. And mackerel is very rich, and it doesn't keep, it's so rich. Mackerel is richer than salmon now. So I went over to the house and I said to the missus, where's the guts of them mackerel? Oh, she said, God, can you smell them? So I don't care whether, where are they? So we got them out, it was in the pen, you know. I rolled them up, I run over to Smith. I said to Harry, the manager, he's dead too, Lord rest his soul. I said, Harry, I want to play a joke on Smith. Give me them guts as I was underneath the counter and put them back. Oh, he said, no, no way. Says I, this is a joke. Now, you want to get back at and back on your boss. This is the time here now. Says he, fair enough. I says, oh, right. Give me them. And after rotten guts, the smell of them was terrible. Right. Smith come down after having his tea. Harry, what's the smell? I don't know, sir. Your guess is as good as mine. He says, listen, is there anything wrong with that Lurick Murphy's nose? He says. I couldn't tell you. He says, Jesus, he's had the cleaning of them. And he didn't smell them. So says he, Hardy, you'll have to walk back, he says. I'm poisoned. As true as anything, he says. I'm at being poisoned. So anyway, I went back the following day. I kept clear that night. Went back the following day. Says he, come here, Lurick, says he. Smith, this is Smith. See, is there anything wrong with your nose or your smellers? Yeah, I said, I can't smell a vadenize or something like that or guitar. Jeez, he says, didn't you tell me? He says, do you know that Allison? Told me he was at the Catching Den yesterday. He said, in a white beatnet. He says he must have had them for the last 6 months. Says he, but them that laughs best. Says he, I've a Mickey Finn. He says, I've a point for him. And as soon as he comes in, he says, he'd be as sick as me or poisoned. He says again, I'm done with him. See, I give him 2 points for them. They weren't worth one. He says he must have had them in band or something. He says they were ransom. So that was a joke I played on Smith. And Paddy was delighted. So pure out of it was an innocent victim of my practical joke there. That's one of the... Hallam was a great blow.
Well, Smith himself was a great character.
He was indeed. I remember the 31st of March one year, when that Mr. J owned the Regal, and he also owned the wrist. So I think it's called the Oscar now. Is that right?
He
asked me to get the telephone directory for him. And he rung up the Pangrove, he says, and he could imitate anyone. This man was a London Jew, and he was real cockney, you know. And Smith imitated him. He rung up the Pangrove. He says, hello, is that the Pangrove? He says, can I have so many gross of tubs? This is ice cream. He says, we're having a function in the Ritz Cinema, Balls Bridge, tomorrow, he says. And I want so many orders, so many tubs, you see. Right. He rings up O'Reilly's at Sandymount, a publican. He ordered, what he didn't order in drink. It's unbelievable. So many dozen of stout, so many dozen of ale, gin, whiskey, scotch, brandy, you name it, he ordered it. And he also, at the end of it, I was listening to that on the phone, he also said, would you supply me with empty glasses, please? I'll be accountable for the breakage. Now, this was supposed to be Mr. J. Now, Smith said to me, see, this is the biggest order O'Reilly ever got in his life. He wanted to get a car to deliver it to the Ritz.
Right, that was it.
Now, he rung up the Regal, that's next door to him, just across the road from the shop, the pub, Smith's pub. And he asked, could he speak to John? This is the bouncer. John was the bouncer then. John is dead. And he asked the cashier, could he speak to John? And he could hear the cashier saying, oh, here's Mr. J, get John. John, come along.
Hello.
John, come from West Cabra. So, and incidentally, there was a bus strike at the time. See? So Smith says, hello, John, he says, we're having a function up in the Ritz tomorrow, he says. I want you to be up there, he says, and bring one of the boys. Again, half eight. And John says, sir, don't you know it's me day off? Well, he says, damn the expenses, John, I'll give you double time. And you can have another day off in lieu. Fair play, sir, says he, but there's no buses running. Says he, there's a strike on with the buses. Well, he says, try and get a taxi, and he says, repairs the charge. So, anyway, John arrived on foot up the Regal. So, there was an old character in Smith's, Rankin Smith's, Henry Charters. He'd done the renovating and fixing the seats and all, anything was broken, sweeping it up and all. And he seen him out in the bar drunk. And he used to flick the phone upstairs, and he'd run upstairs, and he called for Charters wasn't on the phone. So Henry steamed around. Ah, he was well on. Hello, this is Mr. J, Charters. I want you up in the Ritz tomorrow. And says Henry, I was there. Says Henry, sure, sir, says he. I'm doing a job up in Newbridge, having it for a lady. Well, he says, Charters, damn the expense, he says. Name your price, he says. Fair price, sir, I'll be up. Says he, bring your big brush up. Up the all arrived the next morning. He drove up and parked his car in Oakland's Park Smith. They all arrived at Pangrove and all with the tubs, ice cream. O'Reilly's had a charter the car to bring up the beer. And the manager of the Ritz, Billy, I don't know his other name, but Billy, he says, what's all this, Adam? There's a function here. says, Billy, this is the Force of Abel. Do you not know that?
The capstan turned and sails unfurled. The schooner scudded down the Liffey. The damsel gave a piercing shriek. She was a mother in a jiffy. The vessel crossed the harbour bar. Her course was set for foreign waters, to China, where they're very wise, and drown at birth their surplus daughters.
Roger, Rugger, Rowdy, Rocks, Roger, the Ritter Rider, the Rabbi, Rat, Red Johnny, he was another Morphy, Stingers, Skin, Saw, Sappy Head, Snow Gale, Snardler, Sparrow, Slasher, Spider, Snipe. And there was an elf led out, and he wore a pea cap. He was a great owl man. He was a great man. Snow Gale was his name. And everyone that come along, Snow would ask them for a match. And he must have had all his pockets full of matches, because be Jesus, he'd ask everybody for matches. But he was a great character, and he'd be able to look out. And if you only seen a speck, like a sparrow, coming in, and you'd say to Snow, I think this is a vessel. And some of the fellas would say, that's a schooner. But Snow would be able to tell you exactly what it was, whether it was a coal collier, or whether it was it might be one of the B&I vessels, Bourne's and Laird's Line. Maybe it might be only an old coal collier. It could be a fishing trawler, but he'd be able to tell you exactly what it was long before it came into sight.
That Cromwell landed in Ringsend is a well-known fact, but far more interesting for me is the story of a runner-out. Sam Caswell tells the tale of his father.
He was a citizen army man, and he was engaged in the Stephen Green's garrison with Countess Markovitz. And after fighting there, he came home, and he was on the run, he was, over an Arloy sea sergeant that was drowned at Ringsend Bridge. And they accused my father of drowning this RIC sergeant. So he was on the run, he was. So one evening he left Ringsend, and we heard that he had went away on a trawler from the Pint of the Wall. So he was on this trawler for some time, until he transferred to a larger vessel. And the larger vessel, anyway, that he enlisted on, it pulled into Archangel in the Soviet Union, and that coincided with the Russian Revolution, the proletarian revolution in the Soviet Union at the time. So he joined the Red Guards, and he it was accepted and went down to fight. I fought in Tiflis in Georgia, down where I think Stalin was born at the time. But he fought under Stalin, actually, he did. And with the Red Guards, and he remained then after the proletarian revolution, he remained in the Soviet Union working on Rabfacs, they called them. They were similar to technical schools here. They were. And he worked as a builder labourer on the Rabfacs. He became a charge hand, and he was working on the Rabfacs, he was. But when a delegation went away from this country here to the Soviet Union to visit the young Soviets, there was Helena Maloney, Bob Tynan, now the Municipal Workers Union, Helen Shenevics, Bill Den, of the Amalgamated Society of Woodworkers, Barney Conway, out of the Workers' Union of Ireland, and a few more. My father came back with them, and when he came back, he took up work as a corn porter in the Dublin granaries on the south wall. I remember one time I went into the National Museum, and I was doing a bit of reading in the museum there, and I met up with this fella, and it was Neil Gould Verschuyl. Now, he never liked to be called Verschuyl, but Neil Gould, he didn't like the name Verschuyl. However, we rambled down along the college wall, and Neil said to me, "We'll have a drink," although he himself, I found out afterwards, he was by no means a drinking man. But we went into the Lincoln Bar, and he bought a drink anyway, and we chatted for a while, and I invited him down for to have a cup of tea. So when we went home anyway, I was telling him about my father, and he was most anxious to meet him. So the two of them got into great conversation at first at the fireside, and the father said to me to make the tea, and I went out to make the tea, I did, and when I came back, there the two of them were, and they were chatting away in a strange language that I didn't know at all or couldn't understand. So I left them to it, and afterwards I discovered that they were speaking Russian.
They're happy now in sweet Ringsend, that gem that sparkles on the Dodder. He lives a peaceful merchant's life and does a trade in oats and fodder. By marriage lines she's Mrs. Doyle. She runs a stall of periwinkles, and when he hears she's that away, his single eye with joy it twinkles.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.